So what did you say? Somebody say something about Thompson. So Ginny's saying that Thompson, his noetic polity is in the Revelation. Is that what you're saying, Ginny?
Yep, Bob, sorry, I was on mute. Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying, that the everything that he was talking about, the total destruction of the environment, the demise of the chemical body, and the challenges of the economic system and all the hidden environments of that were the three main themes of what he wrote about, and those are the three main themes of Revelation, and Ion even lays it out, how it all occurred, and then brings in the solution about where what is going to happen until 2020, till the year on your chart, Bob. So, I mean, it's really outstanding to see that intersection.
All right. So I guess now's the time to bring in Thompson, what I've been reading this week. His book, Coming Into Being, came out in 96. And it's the spelling out of the lectures he was giving his group that Sharon and I were part of in 93, 94, 95. And he introduced this book, Reevaluating the Importance of McLuhan, and that was based on what I was telling him. And when he read the foreword of this book to our group, and he talks about our group being special compared to the San Francisco group he had to go to, also funded by Lawrence Rockefeller, the Center for Integral Studies, but the kids there were more into Terence McKenna and taking drugs. They weren't into reading books. So he's talking about how he appreciates the literary quality of the group at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine. And so I'm rereading the book, and he's got McLuhan all the way through it. He's saying McLuhan was right here, and McLuhan was right there. And this is when, this is 3 years after my lunch with him on November 2nd, 1993, after he'd done his courses through October, and I got to know him, and we went to dinner, lunch, on the day Giuliani got elected in New York, and he was telling me that he didn't think I should bring McLuhan up. Nobody knew who McLuhan was anymore. He even taught in Hawaii in 1985 at the university here, in the communications department, and the professor who led the communications department had never heard of McLuhan. That's how bad it was in 1985. And it never got better until Wired magazine brought McLuhan back in 93. But we're sitting there in 93, and Bill doesn't know about Wired magazine yet, even though a lot of the writers he knew through the years, like Stuart Brand, and he's saying that there's no point in bringing McLuhan up. So 2 years later, he's writing a book all about the importance of McLuhan. So I'll take credit for that. He had a reappraisal of McLuhan. Okay, so this is the chapter called Weird Myths About Human Origins as Expressive of the Evolution of Consciousness from the Territorial Nation-State to Global Noetic Polities, The Strange Cases of Zechariah Sitchin and Rudolf Steiner. So he does a lot on those guys and compares them, and he likes Steiner better than Sitchin. So then he says, he comes to this point, page 89, when one shifts from Sitchin to Steiner, one moves into more of an awareness of multidimensionality. In Steiner's works, the gods are not rocket pilots, but forces of evolution and planetary development mythologically expressed as archangels. Let me read that again. The gods are not rocket pilots, but forces of evolution and planetary development mythologically expressed as archangels. Steiner developed his own forms of meditational practice, a form of yoga for the West, and therefore his cosmology is not merely a technology. As one goes through yogic practice, whether from the East or the West, one experiences the opening of the chakras, the cerebrospinal centers of consciousness, and encounters the richness of multidimensional space. No longer is everything expressed and structured in three-dimensional space. As one stops the beating of the heart and the pulse of the breath, one moves into fine microstructures of time in which angels, he's got angels in quotes, in which angels become part of one's newly expanded symbiotic consciousness. It is a new kind of evolution. Even the current craze of angels, for all its addiction to kitsch, is a sign of this cultural transformation. In the formal cultural shift, from Europe to the American frontier, the dynamic was of cowboys and Indians. from Natty Bumppo and Chingachgook to the Lone Ranger and Tonto. Now, in our shift from the continental to the galactic frontier, the pairing is of humans and angels, or humans and extraterrestrials. Just as in the evolution of the cell, the mitochondria and the plasma cells inside the gigantic eukaryotic cell, so now the ego finds itself inside a multidimensional field of life in which beings participate in its newly extended field of consciousness. Unlike us, these multidimensional beings have bodies that seem to be made out of music and mathematical lattices of light. So this is where we're going to get into Zappa. So I'll read that again. Unlike us, these multidimensional beings have bodies that seem to be made out of music and mathematical lattices of light. This elevation of consciousness is expressed in Dante's Paradiso, in which a cognitive bliss presents, quote, the angel sphere that knows most and loves most. Read that again. In Dante's Paradiso, in which a cognitive bliss presents, quote, this is from Dante, the angel sphere that knows most and loves most, unquote. If one prefers a more contemporary version of this experience, then there is Arthur C. Clarke's and Stanley Kubrick's film, 2001, Space Odyssey. This work of science fiction is a more Sitchinesque vision in which initiation is technologically mediated. But when the astronaut goes through the Stargate, he passes into multidimensionality and encounters rotating lattices of light and music that conduct him through an initiation. These lattices of light and music serve as midwives to his rebirth and carry him back to his planet so that he can become the messianic star child for an Earth in crisis. So, you guys like this so far? Any commentary?
Yeah.
Yes, it's great.
I think the 2001 is it's really interesting how the computer starts wondering about awareness, consciousness, and God. And I like that there is no more division between the technology and the
yes,
what we call the organic or first nature. It's all the same.
Yeah, you're talking about Hal in 2001 wandering around in the spaceship.
Yes, and in a way, since we fell, we are in that situation.
Yeah, since we fell.
Like, what are we? Yes.
What are we? Why?
Yeah. When Roxy was 7 years old, she'd get on her Mexican palace roof and look at the starry sky in the middle of the night and scream, why? That's what she started doing at the age of seven. And then McLuhan writes that preliterate people don't have linear sequential causality, so they never had the question why. So I see Roxy as a young kid pissed off at what literacy was doing to her. And she's asking,
yeah,
why are you making me get fucked up over why?
I like that. I like the line, the ego finds itself inside a multidimensional field of light.
Yeah.
So it is like Roxy's ego was asking, why?
Yeah, why? And she had a grandfather who was telling her fantastic stories, you know, like Sitchin. So as a young mind, she had to deal with this guy making her question everything that she was ignoring in school.
Yes, because at the end, he could not go to the end of the explanation. Like, okay, who made the pyramid? We don't know.
How
were they built?
You were saying you'd ask
Nobody
him.
Nobody knows.
Are you saying you'd ask your grandfather to finish the explanation and he couldn't do it? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it's like, we don't know.
She's talking to this wise guy who had no answers. He passed on the family virus to her.
Yes, and the most impressive is in Mexico you have pyramids. And
yeah.
Really impressive, like in Teotihuacan, so you can go and be there and have this feeling of...
What? Say that again? Tap in. Check your mic. Tap into the feeling of what?
Yeah, in those places, when one sees everything is aligned with stars. And,
yeah.
And they're very big, and it's really, one has this feeling of the computer in the space.
You can see Rocky.
Who were the gods who did this?
Yes, who were the gods? So Roxy's sitting there, her eloquent, eccentric grandfather's telling her all these stories, these strange phenomena, like some guy would Someone happened to him and nobody could explain it. And she said, yes. And then he'd go on more, yes. And then when he get to no end ending, she'd go, well, come on. What happened next? Sorry, we don't know that. It's the worst kind of bedtime story. This guy would lead her along the path and then leave her hanging. So she'd have to start doing her own research. Scream at the sky, why?
Yes, that's for me the big confirmation, that the big anomaly always, that there's this super technology that we cannot...
Yeah, we could not do what the pyramid guys did.
And they're there. Material thing. So that's the big mystery landscape. The big why is the pyramid.
Yeah. And so she starts reading and listening and looking and meets the journalist who has 40,000, 30,000 books and wanders around the library. This little nun-wanting kid wanting to be a nun or a saint.
Nun-wanting.
He's trying to do research.
That's why I think I was interested in Bob, because Ion said he has to do with this building of the pyramids, and I said, oh, I have to know this.
Okay, now say that again.
Finally.
With your mic clear. What happened with Ion?
Yeah, he said that you were connected to the building of the pyramids. So for me it was like, oh, at last.
At last you get the answer. Yeah, we really were what she was looking for 30, 40 years. What do you think of that, Gene, Ginny, Susanna, and whoever else, Chad?
I think it's very interesting how Egypt, France, and America somehow are related.
Yeah.
And also how the finances developed. Many things happened in France and had repercussions then in America.
Right, and how McLuhan in the early 60s was writing how the 20th century was a time of Egyptian sensibility. People were becoming like the pharaohs, managing huge environments. And he said Burroughs was trying to express that. But McLuhan saw the retrieval of the Egyptian factor.
Yes, and that's why for me it's like this type of serendipitous things that confirm that this attack was on the day of the Bastille.
Yes.
And we see Trump says this is war. If I become president, I'm going to ask.
Yeah, as soon as I become president, there will be a war. You know, Mary
McLuhan. The army that had, there was no uniforms.
Yeah, Mary McLuhan is.
So he's declaring war to the whole world.
He's in mob consciousness. Yes, he's declaring war on everything. Mary McLuhan used to say, I don't know if she got it from her father, that every president has to have a war. Been like that way ever since, I don't know, Eisenhower. So Barack had his war, and who was before Barack? George Bush Jr. had his war. So now Trump can't wait to have his war. He's got a new one. Every new president has to have a new war, like a new thunder, a new technology.
Yes, and the trigger is this attack on the day of the French Revolution.
Yes. I think the French should take it personally.
Well, that was something I wanted to bring up, Bob, that Roxy put in the video, that paper money was first invented by the French because they were bankrupt, having financed the revolution, the U.S.,
yeah.
American Revolution. And then
yes.
Shortly thereafter, there was the Louisiana Purchase. So there was another, but the U.S. didn't have money to make that purchase, and they ended up borrowing the money from banks in Europe. And
which
then,
go back to China. That's Saint Germain, right?
Yes. And that has to be like this because the beast, the dragon, and the undermine all are America. So in a way, there is a logic on how...
In the debt.
Yes, how the financial system has to do with the process of ascension.
Yeah.
Of we are in this situation, we created this system, that we cannot control.
Okay, so
and
now Bob.
Finally bring science forth.
What's that last words, Roxy? Do it again with the mic close.
Yes, that was the thing that made I am came forth.
Yes, that we had come to the end of the financial
so
thing.
So it's very interesting to see the whole process and how it's linked to the French royal house, to the monarchy.
Well, and taking your power means taking over the banking system or becoming your own banker. That's part of taking your power. That's why this is part of ascension. This is the world of Mortar, but it's intimately involved with your ascension, how you're going to be your own money generator.
Yeah. Okay, now, Bob.
Yeah, Gene.
Okay, now, you said that the financial system or finances money became manageable under electric conditions, right?
It became, it wasn't ground. Remember, McLuhan points out that money is no longer private property in 1929, 30, 31, when it crashes. When it was private property, it was ground, and that's what the central bankers could manipulate. They did that for 300 years, say. But now with the electric environment, where you're getting the radio environment, which is giving you information and experience, wealth, for nothing, didn't cost anything.
Right.
You got the radio.
And you said also credit for all.
Credit for all. And so the money, the private ownership of money, collapsed in the early 30s. So John Maynard Keynes comes forth and says, you know, everybody's going to have to be able to use this medium. It's no longer private property. So therefore, it doesn't matter if we're in debt. It's now a massage. We just
right.
use the money as an environment.
Right.
We keep it going without any accounting, good and bad, or cost deficit thinking that had been the situation before. Because when you have information, when you have a radio, they give out information on the radio station, and everybody shares it, and nobody has to give something back to the radio station for having been given information. So the whole thing of I'll give you an apple and you give me an orange falls away. That's like the chemical body bartering, and then there was a money level to it. That falls away in the 30s. So then money becomes just a managed environment, a given.
Yes.
And that's okay until the computer goes around it in the 60s. And then, now the sharing of money. So the first stage was to make sure everybody share credit. So they gave up having money as a public property. So McLuhan called that the poor man's credit card. Money was a poor man's credit card. But the wealthier middle class would just have credit cards. So that is, so McLuhan's tetrad on the credit card is it enhances prestige, obsolesces money, that would be public money, not private money, retrieves conspicuous consumption, and when pushed to extreme, flips into bankruptcy, which that credit world ended in the mid-70s when New York went bankrupt. So there was a problem from that point on in the credit economy, and that really tanked in the late 70s, early 80s, and then they went into digital money or tax derivatives or junk bonds, like nothing quadrupled.
Yeah.
And that ran the economy for 25 years till it collapsed in 2008.
Hey, Bob.
That would be the Android meme phase. That was money for the Android meme. What?
There's one aspect that you missed in that chronological sequence that you did, because there was a money-making factor in when the media first got started, and that was with the advertising. The companies paid the media to run their commercials, and that is what actually caused or created the conspicuous consumption, created demand and need when there really wasn't any, and this whole, I have to have the brand, I have to have the this and the that and status and it's material consumption, and that created a huge machine of money flow.
Okay, now this is your field, advertising, but you might not know this. If you read McLuhan's stuff on advertising, it's pretty interesting. What was advertising originally for, let's say 100 years ago, even though it goes back into the 19th century? as you had increasing technologies developed in the 20th century, advertising was the news. It was seen as a viable social function. Okay, we've made this. The guys in the factory made it. So then the management and information level would send the news via advertising around the world about what had been made. Nothing wrong with that. And yes, it stimulated, you don't want to say useless needs, because speech is a useless need. And use the word media, you got to go back to the first media, which is nonverbal communication. So don't say the beginning of media. Just say that advertising was the glue, the blood, that held together, and it's like the central nervous system informing everybody about what was being produced in different parts of the extended body. All these products, all these different little gadgets, nothing, they're not needless. They can be made, so they're made, and then they create a space. Now, the average chemical body is not trained to handle this, so it gets disoriented, and some become fanatic keeping up with the Joneses, and others drop off, and then they one-up each other over which role is important. But it's a technical function of advertising. See, you could say that, you know, this thing that people had to have objects, let me say this point, people had to have objects. That was filling in. That was literate, visual, kinetic man had to go shopping and hold on objects while they were floating in the radio and TV environment. You know, they're discarding, they're floating, and they want to hold on stuff. So it's not necessarily that advertising caused people to want things. The wanting was caused by the electronic vortex itself, and advertising facilitated quickly what you could buy and hold on to.
Right.
You see the difference, Susanna?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You have to look at the electricity is motivating everything. It's such a warping. It's killing the guff. It's doing everything from the most obscure esoteric to the most daily craving. And people could not see that electric media did that until people get their iPhones. When they see everybody looking at, they say, "Oh my God, the technology does do something to us. Look, it transports us." And now it's in everybody's face, right?
Yeah.
The Android.
But
meme.
No, people didn't see that with radio and TV.
And so I keep going back to the massage of the form, Bob. Advertising like was an extreme global massage of the form of money, of and everything surrounding.
Well, all media are massages. The advertising is the bureaucratic organization of it. Okay, you got these catalogs, and they show you that. You over here, you want to see what kind of albums are out, what kind of books. Now, Time magazine was the weekly coordinating of that. It would go through all the media categories and tell you what happened that week. So the magazine is in the Dobbs quadrant, and it's the main medium. What is the content of the magazine? The ads. You know, the ads are an important part of the magazine. So it's the medium is the magazine through the 20th century. And you'll see magazine is a very important term, pun and technology in Finnegan's Wake. Joyce does a lot with the magazine.
You guys, Ion just talked to Susanna about Life magazine just in the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
And Susanna said, you mean that you first got it as Life was a magazine. And
right.
You said, include it all with all those ads and everything, Ion?
That was Deb. That was Deb West. Yes,
oh, Deb West it was. Okay.
Ion was making a pun about Life as a magazine.
Right.
It's Life magazine.
Yeah, I got that from my chart. He's always using my chart to come up with new ideas. He's always explaining the chart. So I used to say that you can see it on somewhere, maybe on one of the early albums in the booklet or in an early website. News is the satire of advertising. Advertising is the blood. It's the thing that keeps the Android meme going. It's the central nervous system. And then news comes in and says, "Well, yeah, you like that thing you sold? Well, there was 10 fucking car accidents over here. Look at this. Look at the disservices here." So the news kept telling the bad news. And because now McLuhan would say, advertising was good news, telling you what was coming, what's happening. Most people couldn't keep up, so they got mad at the good news, that's advertising, so they loved the bad news. which was regular news telling you the tragedies every day of the disservices of the good news environments called advertising. So the bad news, good news, is the yin-yang dialectic in the advertising meme, in the Android meme's structure. It's the yin-yang, good news versus bad news.
And now in the internet environment that we're in now, it's all messed up. There's no control.
Yes,
advertising, everything's free. You can get music free. You don't have to pay for it. You just download. You can watch TV.
And now what they understand, you know what they understand there? That's Jockey Lew's idea. Using a technology is propaganda, not as content, not as message, just using it. So everybody is giving away things for free to get you using it so they can become an environment. That's all they're doing.
Books are free.
Say that again?
I saw in I and Bob that you can download Bob books for free.
That's right. And like, Ed put that together. I don't know where he fucking got that. He made his own Bob book. I have to ask him about that. I think he told me about it, but I didn't know anything about it. There it is.
So these are all just, we've just been describing all expressions of the meaningless form of money.
It's not
like
meaningless. No,
well, there's
just
no
the ratio.
Value.
It shifts. It has great value. Money was a medium in the 19th century. It was a ground. Very important. And you don't get rid of media. And so it just shifts its position among other media, including newer media, that show up. It shifted. It became no longer private ownership. It became public ownership.
I want to say something. Goethe. John Locke created...
Yeah, put the mic on your mouth and speak loud.
Yeah, when paper money was created by John Locke in France, Goethe once inspired by John Locke to write Faustus.
Faust, yes, was written by Goethe. We're thinking of John Law, who started the first printing press economy.
Yes, and he thought this new currency is somehow bad. and he says that he makes a pact with the devil to be able to create
money
out of nothing. This
paper
money. So he says this new currency is somehow satanic, evil.
This is what Goethe wrote in Faust, you're saying.
Yes, and he had the power to create the paper notes because he had he made a pact with the devil.
Yeah.
And the same reaction was when you created the new currency, the RNA drops, people also had this reaction. Like,
that's right,
the
there's
devil,
a
on the bottle.
Devil on the bottle.
But every time there is a new thunder, people react like that. Like they think it's evil or bad. Like,
yeah,
this creation is cannot be human. It's something else.
They register the pain of the new environment, and they say, this is painful, what you're asking us to change. Like McLuhan would say, good news, advertising asks people to change, and people don't like that. So they demand Armageddon apocalypse via bad news, and news just got badder and badder, like, by the 80s, right? It just accelerated. Once Walter Cronkite was gone, the sober guy, and you have these young punks coming on and just putting out endless bad. And if you thought you would, who was it that you just said the journalist went nuts on the TV, right? Who was saying that? Ginny? Yeah, Ginny's on the Fox guy. He forgot. He just needs to start looking at the ads. He's getting too lost in his own profession of following the news. Go over, pick up a magazine, and look at all the good news, and he can calm down. Bob is a doctor. I hand out magazine ads for my drug. I don't offer Prozac and all the crazy stuff the regular doctor. I offer magazine ads.
I wonder anybody just popping in and hearing this conversation who would go, what?
That's right.
Crazy.
Nothing makes sense. This is a disciplined secret society right in front of everybody. We're so misunderstood that we could have our business meetings right in front of everybody.
That's the thing with with the 6666, that's the meme of...
Yes.
I mean, Gender Revelator talks about the six pieces, 666 pieces of gold of King Solomon. And then people related that number with the devil, and I don't know if there's any place where that is said. I don't think so. It's about the financial system, and it's about...
Well, Ian said the 666 refers to 6 degrees of separation, but the media have changed the meaning. Now, did you see in the video, Roxy found the ad for the first Apple computer?
Yes, yes.
And it sold for $666.66, and he named it after his daughter Lisa.
Uh-huh.
That's Mona Lisa? No, that's you, Gene.
The second...
Mima.
The second model was Lisa.
The second mother?
Model.
Model. The second Apple? Model. Yeah. Second model was Lisa.
And then they were...
Lisa. See, why would they put 666? You know, what... They could have been satirical, but it's pretty uncanny to rub that into people's faces, right? It almost seems that Steve Jobs was part of a secret society that would make jokes
Apple.
On the population.
Well, Apple.
Yeah, the
also,
Apple, too.
That correlation.
Yeah.
But that kind of relates
with
back,
the archetypes.
Back to what Roxy was saying, that it's very disturbing to make something out of nothing. And...
they don't understand when technology shows up, where it came from. They don't understand it, so they think it came from nothing.
That's the meme of the tree of knowledge and the serpent.
Yes.
The genesis of technologies of thunders starts with the fall.
With
and
the
that's
what?
Why maybe
with the what?
The fall.
Fall, yes.
Fall.
Yes, fall. I did that. I had invented a new technology, so
well,
I said, well, everybody's going to have to fall to appreciate this. So I kick you off the edge. You all jumped off the ground, well, all 4 billion of you, and you enjoyed my new technology, which was speech. That's what I
first
learned.
It really goes without saying, Bob. It really goes without saying.
It goes without saying. No, none of that. We are saying.
I was going to bring that up.
Every new thunder
is associated with the devil.
Yes. In Finnegan's Wake has all this chaos going on. People screaming, yelling, you're a devil. And they start going to war over it. Yes. Yep, that happens. So, Chad, are you with us, Chad? I think Chad fell off. What happened, Chad? Well, he had to go, but... You didn't have to go this soon.
I'm going to get something to drink.
Well, you're the clearest sounding ever right now when you're saying you're leaving. You were the clearest.
Okay, then when I come back, I use this.
Yeah, use that, whatever it was.
Okay.
So the, so I got to go back and read what I was reading, but I'll wait till she gets back. So.
Well, let me just ask you this, Bob, because I had this thought. I was... this payday environment where we're all talking and you're teaching us to talk right, is this the new art? It's a new art form. So is that? Does that mean that speech is obsolete? That conversation, discussion is obsolete?
Yep. And that's why when something's obsolete, it means there's more of it. It doesn't form things. It's not constitutive, was McLuhan's word. It does not
and
shape
you say
things.
Art then imitates it. Then art looks back at it in a different way.
What are you saying about art?
That you say art looks at past technology and turns it to art. Like
well, that's Thompson's
the TV,
phrase.
That with the movies and. So.
Yeah, no. Do it. There's two different thoughts here. Thompson takes McLuhan's idea and adds his own twist. McLuhan's idea is every new environment, you don't notice it, but you notice the previous environment, and that becomes an art form.
Right.
That and that old art form that you're noticing was not noticed when it was a new environment. So right today, everybody is surfing the internet, making information, creating information, and consuming it because it's obsolete. It is It is totally available. What they don't notice is the new environment, which is Iandom. They don't notice the new the thing that's shaping everything. They're engaging in all the one step back. So processing, consuming, and making information is today's art form. And then Thompson says, every new technology slays the old environment, and we retrieve the slain technology as art. That's his quote. It's in my book. We slay the present with new technology and save the past as art. That's not the exact words, but that's the idea. So, okay, so he adapted McLuhan, taking the old environment as an art form.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? See, so we're being ascended is obsolete. That's why Ion came forth to make it available to everybody. It was no longer a secret activity. All the portals were open.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not obsolete yet. When you got millions of people ascended, then it'll be obsolete.
Mm. But you're slaying a bunch of technology.
Yeah, we're slaying everything. We're slaying everything and saving you as God, Goddess, Art. You were that old technological environment. We're slaying you. We're wiping you out, but we're going to retrieve you with our products and save
you. Yes, because everything ultimately serves us. And
yes.
Money went a long route around to come back and finally serve us again. Well, it served us all along. I'm still hung up on the money was created out of nothing and became everything.
Well, it wasn't created out of nothing. It was made by a printing press. Just nobody knew how to relate printing activity to their normal bartering medieval economies. They didn't know what to do with it.
It was the new technology.
So a middle class that started to sell a lot and get a lot of money in Amsterdam, they started being the new environment of merchants that could use the money medium and became a language, a propaganda, a culture in motion. And you know what they discovered? Here you got the religions, the Islamic and the Catholic religions, saying you can't charge interest. It was called usury. And then the Protestants and the Amsterdam guys, these first successful merchants with the new printing press, said, no, we're going to charge interest. And then that caused a big shock that they could make extra profit and not worry about the satanic legacy of it.
There was a distinction between investment and borrowing.
Yeah.
Where is that in the chronology?
The oligarchs, the ones who adjusted to the printing press world and maintained their wealth.
That was the new technology.
Yeah, those that adapted to that, they never lent money. They only invested. They didn't want to get involved with everybody. They were too secret. They didn't want to have a way of having to deal with the headaches of someone who couldn't pay you back.
And that was the new form.
So they would just encourage new developments. I mean, that's what I did with the Secret Council 10. We just went around and looked at new labs, new things that were being invented, including Hoffman's LSD lab, to see what my bosses were going to invest in.
Sure.
That's like practical information hunting. They're not going around and being a tourist and just going to a museum or to an opera in Berlin or something, consuming. They'll do a bit of that. But when you're an active agent in the economy, you're going around to see what environment you want to expand. That means invest in a new technology.
Well, and that's why I don't want to bring it in too early into the conversation, but I keep thinking of the concept of no value, nothingness, the nothing.
Well, get rid of that.
No, the new, McLuhan,
let me answer that at this point. The guy at the end of the Hot and Cool interview, Gerald Stern, they asked McLuhan, will there ever be silence? which is like a kind of nothing. He
sure.
says, no, objects are unobservable. You can't experience silence. He said, only all you know are relationships between objects. You can't figure out what any object is. And that's what's interesting when you talk to Ion. In the end, if he defines something that we're trying to get the definition of, it'll then include some other process as part of its definition. Because nothing exists by itself. Now,
so
now
would you consider, is money an object?
No, it's a relationship. But the eyeball, when enhanced by the visual extension known as the printing press, it starts to look at objects as figures and ignores the ground. It tends for 300 years to look at objects as if they are something. Because the eye can hoik out something from the blur and say, okay, that's a figure. That painting over there is up against the wall. I'm going to look at that painting. So you had 300 years of materialistic looking at the figure, the object, and thinking it was something in itself. That's what visual bias is.
Yes.
Yeah. And then the electric gates brings back relationalness, like passing in government, passing the buck. Everybody's involved. All different environments are talking to each other. So nobody can be held responsible as the final object that caused it because there's only tactile interplay. We lost that for 300 years.
Yes. Relationships are manageable.
Relationships, yeah. You can accept nothingness. You realize nothingness was not a real factor that you thought was happening with the printing press era. What do you say to that, Chad? Are you getting any insights, Chad?
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Hi,
yeah,
Chad.
We can hear you.
Okay. Not really. I got cut off. Somebody came here and fucking interrupted me, and I had to leave the building, so I just got back in. I missed like 10 minutes.
Well, we're on a new topic, though. You heard this. The objects are unobservable, and visual space made objects think that they existed by themselves. The eye abstracts things out of the mix, and so if you get that being done for 300 years, people think objects exist as themselves. So they get into philosophy and try to figure out what's the essence, what is matter made up of, and they forget, like primitive people have, that nothing is made up of by anything by itself. It's always involved with a context or with a figure ground relationship or an interplay. So they don't get upset on saying that something is this and can't be that. Like
Has any civilization ever been obsessed with context and not with the figure?
Yes, pre-literate societies are ecological. You can't bring a new technology into that old society. They'll say, well, that'll upset everything. that'll create a whole disruption. And so they would kill any inventor.
Okay, are there any civilizations that have been balanced between context and or figure and ground balance?
Yeah, McLuhan would say, he used to point this out, that the medieval period was balanced because it had a bit of visual space, which is good and hoiked up the individual integrity, but it wasn't as extreme as the printing press, so the acoustic parts of medieval society balanced off the visual. So you'll see he writes an article in the 30s about Thomas Aquinas, that for Aquinas and philosophers before the printing press, the world was unified conceptually, physically. It wasn't fragmented the way it was really going to get apocalyptically fragmented by the printing press. No one had ever experienced that. That's why, you know, Hieronymus Bosch's painting of everybody in weird, fucked up postures, having sexual or different relationships, all in distortion, that's what they saw the printing press was doing. It was a huge Armageddon of sensibility. And, okay, so he would say that China, medieval Europe was balanced, China was balanced, and the 20th century is balanced. He said because you had the interplay of so many different sensory modalities, the visual space of the 19th century, very unbalanced, the 19th century, was made more harmonious, more ecologically balanced, with electricity bouncing off the visual space or the bankers. So Marx's world of the 19th century, which was a big grievance against the bankers, running everything, that didn't apply so much in the 20th century when everybody had a share of the money as private property, as public property. So you had a lot of Marxist revolutionary stuff as the content of the 20th century, the obsolete content. And the new level was beyond Marx and what Thompson's trying to describe, and he's building on McLuhan. See, McLuhan said there was an ecology in the 20th century. He was celebrating the environment as an art form. He was an art critic, not analyzing objects of art, Gutenberg paintings and sculpture and musical performances. He was describing the collective media environments as the new museum of aesthetic interest. That's the breakthrough of his art criticism. That's why he would say Canada was the best artist around, because it was an anti-environment to the United States. So you don't get that. I have a friend who did a PhD on Clement Greenberg, who was the top art critic in the 50s and 60s, promoting abstract expressionism. The debate between him and McLuhan as who's the most relevant art critic. And, of course, McLuhan wins. But you can't tell that to any artist in New York City up until recently. They thought Clement Greenberg was the high priest of art criticism. He understood abstract art, and McLuhan was an idiot who was a Catholic. Can't be a Catholic and be a bona fide art critic.
Okay, where does Einstein stand in the balance between figure and ground?
Einstein is not impressed with anything we've done until Bob showed up. Ian is very impressed with me because I brought Ion in. That's all. Remember
why? Because you're a slack commentator rather than someone who's actively involving themselves with what's going on.
Yes, I remained indifferent to my whole life till Ian showed up. I said, "This is not significant. None of you guys are significant. I'll hang out and talk to you and point out what you don't know, but I never got involved in anything." Until Ian showed up, and then I became a modern, up-to-date businessman, marketing products all around the planet.
And the entire financial system collapses. The entire financial system has collapsed.
That's right. Everything had to collapse so Bob could be the only businessman. It's like Ian says, well, Bob, you're not going to do anything unless you get all the attention. So, yeah, I had to wait till the economy collapsed, then I'll become a businessman. That'll be the only one doing business.
So now, Chad, I'm curious. So bring that back to money and banking. If money is a relationship, will there always be relationships with regard to people? Is there an obsession of objects? Is everybody obsessed with objects?
Yes,
now?
That's what the content of the 20th century was. That was the bankers made art. They built the Museum of Modern Art, the Guggenheim, the Whitney, all these art museums built in the 20s and 30s because the bankers knew that their ownership of the object of money was obsolete in the 30s, money became public property, so they had to keep the identity of owning an object or objectness going, so they turned it into art. They made art the big object.
Archive the objects now, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I was remembering when we went to the Pergamon.
Yes.
Because Ion said the priesthood from Babylon went to the Pergamon and then to the Deutsche Bank. And in the Babylon, as we were looking at the Ishtar Gate and
the
how
wall,
they were
the Ishtar Gate.
They were hypnotized by building walls.
Yeah.
Start the visual space and. And you were laughing that this is just a wall with blue mosaics, and people were so impressed by that. But that's the start of writing. And then there's the meme of they start building, and they want to build the tower to reach the heaven. And then 9/11 is again the destruction of this visual space of these two towers.
To Babylon.
Yes, and the symbol of the dollars are the S and the two
vertical.
Yeah, vertical things that at the origin The first time that was made was in the silver pesos of the Spanish colony.
The dollar sign, you guys, was first made there.
Yeah, the original one is two columns and the S on top.
Yes, back in the 30s and 40s, we would write the dollar sign with two bars. It became
and
one bar later.
That also reminds me of the Temple of Solomon, the two columns.
Right.
And the 11 and the S, the 9-11.
Yeah, S-11 is 9-11. Now, how is S-9?
That's the symbol of the dollars. So that's, again...
Right, but how's the S the 9?
September.
Oh, yeah. The dollar sign had its own obituary in its own icon for 100 years. It was the S-11. Yes. September 11 was written right in there. Now, Thompson...
But then there is also these other aspects that Ion says that's also these two things that are columns are related to the parallel worlds, to the portals.
Yeah.
And it's like the ending, the visual ending of this thing you were talking about, the our obsession with the object, with the visual, with the
right.
Idea.
And if you go back and look at that video where she's filming me at the German museum, which has the Ishtar Babylon wall, and I'm explaining the only reason this wall is an archetype in the museum is that the radio environment in the 20s retrieves the wall as obsolete art form. So radio caused everybody to put significance into this Babylonian artifact. Very complex
Babylon explanation
I give. Yeah.
Wasn't that Babylon, the name of the video?
It's really amazing, all the different levels of what you're explaining. That's the most amazing thing, because you're not just explaining an object, but...
I'm explaining relationships.
And how they echo in what we call time.
Right.
And, for example, Wall Street.
Wall.
In a wall.
To Wall Street. And Nostradamus says something's going to come and knock down the wall, and that's the four-line quatrain that describes Ion, when a wave meets the wall.
What I like about how you explain things is all these levels of...
Relationship. Figure-ground relationship.
Yes.
Did you guys get that?
Yeah.
It's a very complex video where I'm saying we're looking at this wall, which was put in the museum in the 20s and 30s as a significant artifact because the hidden ground of radio made the wall obsolete. Therefore, they said, wow, we got the original wall and stuck it in their German museum.
Fabulous. Oh, that's fabulous.
Yes, and it's in Berlin. You know, the meme of Berlin was the wall, the separation.
And I'm saying this.
The ultimate object.
And I used to do this in museums in L.A. with Jared Fiocca. I'd start lecturing about the hidden ground of the fucking object, and people start gathering around as I did this instant art lecture. But, of course, nobody understood what I was saying. It would be too complex. I mean, I don't even pretend to understand my stuff until I say it.
I was reading an article, the man that bought the Berlin Wall.
Yeah.
His name is Papilovsky. He's a millionaire because the wall at the end, there were two, and it was around the whole city. So he has been selling pieces of the wall like relics. And in the article, he said, I don't understand people. Why did they buy this piece of concrete? But he's a millionaire.
Yeah.
And yes, I think the people say because it's a symbol of freedom. But I think it's more... What you are explaining, it was a symbol of the separation, the many layers that are.
Yeah, it's this kind of people trying to find a sacred object to hold on to, like holding a cigarette while they float on the telephone.
Yes, and the end of separation.
Yes.
And
so they buy stuff to have an icon of separation in their home. They buy a piece of the wall because the wall is archetypal now. That's where we were back in the days when we were fragmented.
Thing, when coins were made in America, it was the first time they put what they called liberty. There was not an effigy of a king, but it was the symbol of liberty.
What was?
And that was the first time. On the coins, always, there was a king.
Oh, and then there was no king on the coin.
Yes, for the first time in America, it's liberty.
Right, liberty. What a word, a concept. They still had coinage in visual space, which was enslaving them, but they changed the surface image or the content, and they thought that was a breakthrough.
There was a French relationship there, too. Didn't that symbolize the Statue of Liberty that France gave America?
Yeah. Well, France brought in industry. You know, they were the Industrial Revolution in many ways. You know, the LaRouche celebrates the scientists of that period, Gauss, Carnot, all these guys who worked under Napoleon. They did a lot of breakthroughs in technology. And they brought in uniform education.
People had to be liberated from working in service and in the lands of the aristocrats because they needed free people to be able to move to the cities and work in industry.
Yeah, what Zappa says, and absolutely free, they needed people to move goods with patriotic cell. S-E-L-L. Move goods with patriotic cell. There was a new... This is what J.W. says, that the blacks were way more free down in his father's grandfather plantation. They moved north and became even worse slaves, you know, in the industrial situation.
Yeah.
So the South is very proud at what they represented. We represented relatively pretty good slavery. You guys up north created an unbearably polluted, bad slavery.
And horrible weather.
Yeah. Yeah. Where are you at, Chad? You have something to add to this, Chad?
No, I have to go in 9 minutes, though.
Well, wrap it up with something that we'll remember you by.
I don't know. I wanted to talk about the banks because that was an interesting topic. I was studying Bitcoin the last few days and all the cryptocurrencies, and it's a mega decentralization of currency exchange. Like anybody can create their own cryptocurrency
right
now.
Let me then read Thompson. Let's have you hear this. Okay, so I'm going to back and read where I was. So we were doing the eukaryote. Okay, the angel sphere that... So the evolution of... this elevation of consciousness is expressed in Dante's Paradiso, in which a cognitive bliss presents, quote, the angel sphere that knows most and loves most, unquote. And look, I won't step. If one prefers a more contemporary version of this experience, then there is Arthur C. Clarke's Stanley Kubrick's film, 2001 A Space Odyssey. This work of science fiction is a more Sitchinesque vision in which initiation is technologically mediated. But when the astronaut goes through the Stargate, he passes into multidimensionality and encounters rotating lattices of light and music that conduct him through an initiation and serves as midwives to his rebirth and carry him back to his planet so that he can become the messianic star child for an Earth in crisis. So that's the end of the movie with the little baby floating there in the room. Okay, so then he says, now, even in the mystical experiences of stopping the heart in yogic meditation, there's still a hermeneutics of the imagination. How does one interpret this experience? Say one has been in meditation for 2 hours and one has slowed down one's metabolism to the point that the heart stops and the breath ceases. And then one feels a movement out of the body through the chakra vortex of the third eye, comma, the Stargate of 2001. Is it the case that the heart has literally stopped? Or is it the case that now our sensitivity to time is so fine and subtle that the interval between each heartbeat has become vastly extended, like Alice going through the looking glass, or a shaman climbing a pole into another world? One is moved into a relativistic time-space. One is no longer situated in a discrete corpuscular self in which the ego holds reality together. Heartbeat-gap-heartbeat. Normally, so that'd be heartbeat-gap. Normally, we ignore the gaps to connect heartbeat to heartbeat with a sense of continuity that we know is the ego or personality. Now, note that. You ignore the gap, and you think you're still alive if you connect one heartbeat to the next. So, let's see. Normally, we ignore the gaps to connect heartbeat to heartbeat with a sense of continuity that we know is the ego or personality. But through meditation, one reverses figure and ground and focuses on the gaps rather than the beats. The gaps are given equal time and space. And when that happens, quote, there goes the neighborhood, unquote. Angels move in across the stream, and it's never going to be the boring suburbs of the ego again. Now, here's where we get into Zappa. Angels, like great jazz musicians, have their own kind of music. As one begins to get a feel for these multidimensional topologies, the only good metaphors for them are music and mathematics, which is why art, music, and mathematics are so critical to understanding these angelic states of emergent evolution. In our American mass culture, angels are presented as insipid celestial humans, but in the Neoplatonic and Iranian traditions, angels are called, quote, celestial intelligences, unquote. In our age, one possible way to rescue angels from Disneyfication is through music and higher mathematics. When we shift into the musical mathematical domains of consciousness in the gaps between each heartbeat and the fine microstructures of human time, then angels begin to have a topological reality. And so one of the most intelligent, sophisticated, and interesting questions we can ask about angels is, how many can dance on the head of a pin? The head of a pin is a point, a dimensionless point, dimensionless point that is the intersection of void and multidimensionality. This dimensionless point is the basin of attraction of multidimensional complexity. It is a singularity like the Big Bang or a black hole that opens up all sorts of possibilities. The universe is exactly all sorts of possibilities. So I have a note there, Zappa's big note. Then he says, what is being brought forth? Can you still stay here, Chad, for this?
Yeah, I've got like 5 more minutes.
Okay. What is being brought forth in the relationship between, let's say, a celestial intelligence and our own human intelligence is a constructed reality, a negotiable instrument for spiritual commerce. And he talks earlier about how money is a negotiable interplay tactile relationship. So, a new constructed reality is a negotiable instrument for spiritual commerce. The image or symbol is not an absolute description of reality. See, that's where it would be an object with its own essence, and that would be everything. The image or symbol is not an absolute description of reality, but a medium of exchange, a form of currency like the dollar bill. Now, the paranoid, the literalist, will say money is valuable because gold or diamonds have powerful occult properties of vibration. If one tries to set up a Hamiltonian central bank in which the government takes the gold and gives the citizen a slip of paper, the paranoid and the literalist will get very nervous and start mumbling about cabals and conspiracies in which the evil ones are trying to gain power to lock all the occult vibrations of gold and diamonds in their magical chambers to rule the world. The evil ones can be the Jews, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, or the Council of Foreign Relations. Fill in the blank. Fill in the blank with the enemy you love to hate. For the paranoid and the literalist, reality is not something brought forth in relationship. It is a collection of things. It is a collection of things. So if they accept the dollar, they want to be sure that there is actually an equivalent amount of gold in Fort Knox to back it up. There's the matching. Never mind that there is not enough gold on the planet to back up all the transactions one might wish to have in a vast global economy. And that is why some conservative literalists won't trust metal as a basis of value, but will insist on land. Whether the literalists are medieval feudalists or mercantilists, or merchants, they place their faith in objects and not relationships. Value is once based on land, then on metal, then on paper currencies backed up by a national bank. Then, in the late capitalism, when Nixon took the world off fixed rates of currency exchange, value was based on nation-state futures, in which a national scientific and industrial technological complex backed up the value of the nation. Foreigners weren't simply buying dollars, they were trading in American nation-state futures. This was why the moonshot was so important. It was backing up the global belief system in the American scientific and technological complex. It was a television commercial for selling American nation-state futures. The emergence of late capitalism is coeval with the emergence of electronic systems of communication, artificial intelligence, and chaos dynamics. It is a new form of mathematical topology, quote, in which, quote, the center is everywhere and the circumference nowhere, unquote. It is an unconscious, consensual domain that allows a planetary culture to come into being. But those whose identities are fixed in the medieval religious group or the industrial nation state start freaking out and become involved in tribal violence, ethnic cleansing, or more American forms of conservative hysteria, such as the bombing of the federal building in Oklahoma City. The global economy is threatening because it is not mappable in three dimensions, and its multidimensionality seems to be evil to both Islamic and Christian fundamentalists. They class it as demonic, although it would be just as valid to identify it as angelic, because it is a phase change from one global economy to another. Since the fall of the Berlin Wall and the meltdown of the Soviet Union, we all recognize that communism is dead. Now listen to what he says. We think rather naively that capitalism won and is alive and doing well. Not so. We are now, and this is written 20 years ago, we are now in the midst of the catastrophe bifurcation from capitalism to